Welcome back to Agriculture Today. I'm Sarah Moyer, once again here with K-State agricultural economist Tim Dalton. He is also the director of the Feed the Future Innovation Lab for collaborative research on sorghum and millet. Those two crops are ones that have been originating back into some of these areas that we've been discussing, some of these areas that have food security issues going on and local availability, as you were mentioning, is a key part of that. But what does some of the research that's being done through K-State and other partners over in some of those areas do for producers back here in Kansas?
Okay, great question, Sarah. So let me just kind of start out with a kind of a bigger picture overview. The program that I work on, the Feed the Future Innovation Lab for Collaborative Research on Sorghum and Millet, is funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. There's a number of those working on other commodities. One works on horticulture, peanuts, soybeans, wheat, and then dry beans and pigeon peas and other types of crops like that, in addition to some of the systems ones on sustainable intensification and otherwise. But these programs were created back in the 1970s, and it was the primary vehicle that the U.S. had to work collaboratively with scientists at the equivalent of the USDA in foreign countries, working with collaborators at universities or other laboratories to improve local food security. And so I work on one which is focusing on sorghum and millet production. And so we work with, collaborate with individuals at the Ethiopian Institute for Agricultural Research, the equivalent of the USDA, Haramaya University, which was established back in the 1950s by Oklahoma State University, Hawassa University. And the idea is that we link U.S. researchers in either the USDA or in universities with equivalents in those countries to focus on issues of common interest. We do the same in Niger. We do the same in Senegal. Those are our three focus countries. We've added some work in Haiti just this past year, where the sugarcane aphid is an incredible problem down there. And so all of these provide us with an opportunity to tap into some of the best and the brightest researchers around the world. And remember, you know, sorghum isn't, or milo was not grown in the United States to begin with. It started out and its origin is in eastern Sudan and Ethiopia regions. So many crops are not from the United States. And so we need this collaborative work in order to help us out as a, you know, base thing to get the seeds. And some of the original work was about collecting varieties and seeds in back in the 70s and 80s. But more generally, the strategy is that we just don't want to continue being a supplier of food aid and food relief. And so by building stronger research networks around the world, those institutions then are able to work on these problems for themselves and target that research so it's more relevant for their populations at hand. And so in one, it's just building this capacity. That's very, very important. But secondly, for example, in the sorghum community, research community, it's very small. So having these networks are very important. And the great example is in Haiti. Haiti's got three sorghum growing seasons per year. They get attacked by sugarcane aphid three times a year. And so if we can begin to work with the Haitians to attack this problem there, it's going to create two more opportunities per year to look at the impact of this pest on sorghum and identify varieties which are resistant. So there's a clear opportunity for us to not only contribute to solutions that are locally relevant in our host countries, but also we learn something in return.
Of course, the sorghum and millet perspective is one that you're most familiar with. Could you speak for others that are also working overseas through K-State and working on some of these projects, maybe with wheat, for example, since that's one that K-State also has an emphasis on?
Right. So Dr. Jesse Poland is leading the Wheat Innovation Lab. It's called the Climate Resilient Wheat Innovation Lab. And he is working with some of the best researchers in the world in northern India, in Pakistan, in Bangladesh, in the Indo-Gangetic Plain, which is really the breadbasket of a good percentage of the world's population, of the Asian population. And there it's just more and more of the same story, more heat, more drought. And so he is working with collaborators there, which again provides more opportunities to test materials and look at strategies and understand how wheat responds to heat and drought stress, and to take that information and adapt varieties in those conditions so that they are more resistant to those, but at the same time learn more about what are the underlying processes of physiology so that he can bring that knowledge back to the U.S. and work with it, with the knowledge that he's gained in adapting varieties for Western Kansas and broader areas. So that's one good example about where Kansas State is a global leader in wheat. There's no question about that. And so we might as well take advantage of our leadership in order to help and work on these problems around the world. The third lab that we have is the Sustainable Intensification Lab. And so, again, this is one which is really focusing on cropping systems, better rotations, better soil management, looking at issues of tighter integration of crops with livestock to close those cycles and those loops so we take best advantage of the inputs that each provides and to maximize the outputs, looking at how that can be used to improve local nutritional status. So one thing we talked about, as Sarah earlier, was the global numbers of food insecure, but there's a lot of individuals who may not on the outside look hungry, but they're lacking micronutrients, vitamin A, iron, zinc, which can be increased by eating a more diverse diet. So the Sustainable Intensification Lab works on improved nutritional issues through these highly integrated cropping systems. And again, Kansas State is a leader there because Kansas is an extremely diverse state from east to west. We have just a huge shift in rain-fed cropping systems to drylands, to supplemental irrigation, to those which require full irrigation, livestock, tree crops, fruits, vegetables. And as a result, we were a natural fit for this laboratory as well. And then the fourth lab is looking at what we can do to reduce post-harvest losses. And so this is through really a two-pronged approach, one looking at how we can reduce storage losses and look at ways we can adapt systems in low-income countries where there's not a lot of resources in order to store crops, and yet you get a lot of damage. And so I love this example that they showed in Central America, where there's a picture of the group there, and you see in the front porch all these corn ears are hanging from the rafters, drying out, and right behind them is this big, huge metal silo. And it's kind of a paradox. Why are they hanging their ears up there? Well, they have the silo behind them, and it's just because it's too expensive for them to operate. And so it's looking at, one, reducing those post-harvest losses through better management and storage, as well as trying to reduce any toxins that can accumulate during, putting wet crops into storage. So we're talking about things, mycotoxins and other aflatoxins, which can accumulate on grains and make them unfit for human consumption. And this is really an insidious issue because you're in a situation where there's limited food available to begin with, and then once all of a sudden it becomes infested with a mycotoxin, and then it's the only food available, but it's really poor quality, and it can cause damage to your liver, to your health. It's just a terrible problem. And so some of the research is showing that there's just a very high percentage of women who are pregnant in nations like Nepal that are finding these mycotoxins in their bloodstream. So the key is to clean up that food source as well and store it so that it can be more nutritious for populations.
So these labs connecting across many of the topics that were reported on in the State of Food Security and Nutrition in the World, that annual report that recently came out, and tying these ideas together of K-State's role and what they're doing to improve this picture of food insecurity, and also the trends that are going on in the world. Do you see the focus of any of the labs shifting with this report, or do you think they'll keep moving forward, working towards the goals that have already been set?
Well, I think that's a really good question, and that's under debate right now at USAID. So they're right now entering in the next phase of the Feed the Future research strategy. Was just unveiled a few months ago in September. And it's always what's going on in this state of food insecurity is always feeding into this debate. Are we using our resources in the best manner possible to attack some of these problems? And so I anticipate that in the next couple of years, that certainly the priorities in USAID will change. Some will remain the same, but others will change as we are updating and learning more about what some of the issues are in the world.
Well, thank you for coming on and sharing with us today, Tim.
Well, thank you very much, Sarah. It's great to be here.
That, once again, was K-State agricultural economist and director for the Feed the Future Innovation Lab for collaborative research on sorghum and millet, Tim Dalton, joining us to talk about a gamut of issues surrounding food security, and this being a timely issue as the 2017 State of Food Security and Nutrition in the World report was released just a couple weeks ago. I'm Sarah Moyer, and stay tuned here on Agriculture Today.